Hello, everybody, and welcome to NWR Connectivity. I'm your host, John Reardon, and I'm joined today by other hosts.
Like me, Neil Ronahan. John, you look great today.
Thanks, you also look great. More high definition than I'm used to seeing you.
Yeah, usually we don't do this on video or in person.
We're not on video now.
But yeah, we're here in sunny, dark Chicago to talk about the Nintendo Direct that happened while I was literally in a plane to come here. And also here is a connectivity OG who joined, I think edited the famed newscast episode 69 or something that went completely off the rails. Mm. What's up, Scott?
Hey man, what's up? Thanks for stretching so I could get to my seat. I appreciate the whole story there in the beginning. Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Neil.
Yeah, Scott Thompson, for anybody that, I guess longtime listeners, I don't know the last time you've been on anything.
Drugs?
good to see you, Scott. And how about another host? Well, also, I don't know the last time you were on an episode of Connectivity.
I did a Metroid.
It's Andy Gurdon.
Oh, you...
Yeah, no. I talked over you while you were talking.
Start over.
I'll come out yet. Don't worry.
I'm trying to make sure that people know who you are by names.
I want to hear the version of the episode where Neil thinks we're on video the entire time.
Eyes are the body's cameras.
I can turn on the camera and just aim it over to Neil, so it's just a video of Neil.
My name is Andy Gurdon. I was on NWR Newscast and NWR Connectivity for a couple of years, a billion years ago.
And you were on the Metroid
Game Club. I was on the Metroid Game Club for Super, I think.
Were you not on? You were on OG Metroid.
Oh, you're on that Metroid.
Yeah, for sure.
You're the person who likes it.
I'm the person who likes it. Best Metroid game they've made, except for a few others. What's up?
Hey, there's one more person here.
Hey, this is Zach Miller. I was also on Connectivity and Newscast and the Metroid Game Club and game shows that we could get in.
You've probably been on like modern Connectivity more than anybody else.
Yeah.
Here. We've been on a couple times. Yeah.
You're technically, besides me and John, I think you're the only person that's quote unquote active staff.
I checked the staff on the website earlier. I'm on there.
I can reactivate anybody who wants to be like...
No, thank you.
you're being redeployed.
I'm only active staff when somebody's good enough to send me a review code and then I...
Yeah, we tap you in when it's something only Zach can refute Dragon's Lair on Game Boy Color.
Actually, Dragon's Lair...
You guys need to see this game, by the way.
Dragon's Lair on OG Game Boy. Dragon's Lair on Game Boy Color? Pretty good. Actually, a really good port of Dragon's Lair.
Dragon's Lair on original Game Boy was a reskin of a Spectrum ZX game called Roller Coaster, but worse.
Is it actually?
It is.
I didn't know that.
I looked it up. I looked up some history on it.
Does the Game Boy Color version support the printer? I feel like that's all I remember from Game Boy Color games, is that you could print things out.
I would hope it does.
But the Game Boy Color one like actually has all the like FMV stuff in it.
Yeah.
Really?
Like it's all compressed and gross, but it's all there. It's like the whole game. It's really cool.
Well, I usually review big booby anime games.
I was trying to come up with like a
lie. What's the word that popped in tits? I was just going to say tits.
Dinosaur games. I usually review tits.
Heaven help us if there's a dinosaur tit game.
I keep hoping they'll make a like a Danger Girl set in a Lost World kind of thing.
Or like, how about like a dinosaur dating sim? I feel like that'd be right.
That'd be weird. Almost assuredly already exists.
I'm sure it does on Steam somewhere. Yeah,
there's a bone reference somewhere.
we've all made the trip
specifically for
this. We were like, they announced this direct yesterday. And it was like, get on a plane, get on a bus.
Yeah. It literally, the direct started, and it was when my plane was supposed to take off.
I don't think, none of us were in convenient places to watch this direct when it was happening.
I was in the most convenient place to watch it, and I was in the middle of nowhere on a train.
Yeah. I was on a bus. Like, you know, well, you were driving.
I was in a car.
Really screwed.
So it was an audio experience for me more so than anything
else. Whereas I had no audio.
I was waiting for my plane to board, so I couldn't listen to it.
For me, my plane taxied a little bit, so I got to see up to the Metroid Prime trailer, and then we took off, and then I came back in just to see the Captain America part.
Which,
that's like, all you need. That's only like,
you got it.
Like 10, 15, like a very efficient plane takeoff and time to Wi-Fi.
Earnestly, you got the whole thing. Like,
those are probably the two peaks.
Yeah, that's it. Let's see. Do we just start with Metroid? Do we talk about it? Is there anything before Metroid?
Metroid's the top thing, yeah.
That y'all wanted to talk
about other things in lesser qualities.
I come out of Metroid Prime 4 seeing more of the game and all of the iconography. The iconography. And also just seeing some of the stuff on like the space-time things that they're referencing. And even just like kind of almost explaining a little bit of like why it's called Beyond. Why is there the whatchamacallit, the wormhole thing in the logo? Like starting to tease some of that, which is really neat and fun. Psychic abilities are a nice little twist. Then it just said the 2025. I want a damn release date.
I
think I've said it on the show. It's been a while, but I have stood to up until today that I've been adamant that Metroid Prime 4 will only be on Switch 1 and not necessarily have a Switch 2 version. This was the first day that I thought that it might not, because I have a feeling that they're holding off on a release date.
Yeah.
It could be two things.
Day 2025.
They don't want to have the release date give like a window into when you would expect Switch 2. Because you notice no Nintendo game in this got a release date. Pokemon was later 2025, which I think was already clarified in the Pokemon Presents. Everything else was 2025, 2026, nothing specific. And I wouldn't be surprised if Metroid Prime 4, if it got a June release date, then, at least to me, that would be like, oh, that's when Switch 2 is going to come out.
Right.
If it got an August release date, you'd be like, oh, it's like, when Switch did, like I feel like whatever release date you would give it now is just going to fuel probably annoying speculation about Switch 2 for the next week.
Yeah, if it were to come out in the next few months, I would expect that it would be a launch game for the Switch 2. Or at least released at the same time.
Yeah.
To drum up sales.
We're 2 business days away from the Switch 2 Direct.
Yeah.
3 business days.
3, yeah, next
Wednesday.
If you're disappointed at the lack of specific dates, like probably by the time this episode even comes out,
I'm a very fast editor.
It's also within one business day once this episode comes out.
But it's also like, it goes to like seeing this Direct even get announced. I think we were talking about it where it's like, I don't really understand Nintendo's marketing strategy in this moment.
Yeah.
And let's roll out Metroid Prime 4 Beyond. Like, they announced it forever ago because they wanted to be like, no, we actually do care about Metroid. And then we didn't hear about it for a long time. They re-cemented it as like, this is what the game's going to be. It's going to do the Metroid Prime things that you expect. That was the trailer last year. Then we had this trailer, which shows you, here's the new things, here's how we're expanding it. Then, like, what would be the next step with that? Is it going to be next week be like, and there's going to be a slightly better version on Switch 2, and there's a release date? Like, it just feels like a really fractured message.
Yeah.
Yeah. Psylocke will be exclusive to the Switch
2. There you go.
Yeah, on Switch 1.
Oh, I am curious, because they did, they've talked about that Switch exclusive versus Switch edition thing was the thing that came out afterwards in relation to their weird digital sharing games thing. And that's what, that's what I would expect for, if Prime 4 has a Switch 2 version, I expect it to be an edition. Like it's just a, I think the base game, I forgot to count the resolution. I think the base game probably runs at 720p. On Switch 2, maybe it runs at 1080. Like, I don't expect them to overhaul the game, but if there are simple things they can improve just by giving it extra juice, that's what I'm expecting out of if there's a Switch version at all, which I'm not totally convinced there will be.
And with the nomenclature of the Nintendo Switch, because so it was with the, we'll talk about the virtual game card stuff in a little bit. But coming out of that, there was commentary on it that it's like Nintendo Switch 2 edition and Nintendo Switch 2 exclusive games. That was the delineation.
Yes.
Like with Nintendo Switch 2 edition, like, let's, you know, two business days away. Let's try to see the future.
I'm getting this podcast out tonight.
Like Game Boy Color versus.
But could it be the kind of thing that, like, when they go through Switch 2, they're like, it could even be a sizzle reel of sorts of, like, on launch day, there's going to be X, Y, and Z Nintendo Switch games getting Switch 2 editions, and it's like, here's the Switch 2 edition of Breath of the Wild, and here's the Switch 2 edition of Animal Crossing, like a couple games, and then one of them is, here's the Switch 2 edition of Metroid Prime. Oh, hey, Metroid Prime 4 is also coming out around the launch of the system. Like, maybe it's the same day, maybe it's shortly before. Like, it's still really, I'm confused and excited to see how they land this marketing ship.
I forgot to say this during the show, and I'm going to say it now because I'll forget otherwise. I think Metroid Prime Remastered looked a little better than Metroid Prime 4.
I think Metroid Prime Remastered has... So, Digital Foundry will disagree with me, because they said that Prime 4 in that first trailer was running at 900p. It wasn't. It's running at 720p. Count your pixels. But,
I love a feisty
joke. Come on, guys.
But it's the only time I'll disagree with Digital Foundry. I think Prime 1 had the advantage of, that's a GameCube game that was built to run at 60 frames per second.
Mm.
Like, that is a tight GameCube game.
Yeah.
And that's still the game engine that Retro is using to this day. They've just added to it. So my understanding is they were able to just take the GameCube one, plop it on Switch, and it's like, all right, well, it's running perfectly. Now we just get to add stuff to it.
Yeah.
Whereas this one does look like, you know, they're doing more, because they're obviously, it's not being built with GameCube limitations in mind, so they're pushing it out further. So yeah, I'm expecting it, at least on like a performance and resolution standpoint, to probably be outdone by Prime Remastered, just because Prime Remastered had less to do.
Okay.
But as far as what they are doing, holy crap, that Borderline looks like a PS5 Series X game. Like, the things they are getting out of the Switch, in the same direct that Pokemon is at, is just incredible.
You know, like, at 60 frames per second. Look at those free frames of water.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the story with how good Prime 4 looks will be told in the structure of the environments. Like, how open are the environments? How big are
I wondered that too, you know?
Prime Remastered, Metroid Prime 1, is a lot of...
Quarters.
Yes. In small arenas. And there's a little bit of verticality here and there, but... Yeah. They're able to do a lot more when they only have to have that much of the area loaded at once.
Exactly. So
I think we could see some really cool outdoor environments in Prime 4 that we've never seen in a Prime game before.
Yeah. Yeah. And it'll be interesting. I've gotten the feeling from some of the stuff they've shown that it does seem more expansive, but it is definitely still feels like they're sticking to the Prime structure. Like, it's definitely still...
All the gameplay was corridor-y.
No, I expect to see mostly corridors and a couple of really big showpiece areas. It's kind of what I'm expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big tree. They said there's a big tree in the middle of the world, right?
Do you think it's just the one planet?
Yeah.
I think so. I think the way that they presented that, and I even, like, when I was on my flight, I was poking around the Japanese website because you listen to the cool background music. it seems like they're focusing on, like, what is it, Vuros? It's a weird bad name.
Yeah.
It seems like, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked, just given, like, how some of the Metroid Prime games have gone in the past, that, like, maybe there's an opening segment on some other
planet. That's because we've seen, we saw in the first trailer, that was not...
That's true.
That's
true. That
was
forced.
Yeah. And it could also be, though, I mean, they've talked about, like, time and space, timey-wimey shit.
Yeah.
This might be an Ocarina of Time thing. Like, you may go backwards or forwards in time at some point, and you go through the same plan. Because they've done, you know, Echoes did that.
Right? Yeah, I was going to say.
Hopefully they do it better than Echoes did.
Yeah.
But yeah, that feels like the direction this could be going and would kind of fit with the theming they've thrown out there so far.
I'd rather have that than the Metroid Prime 3 bouncing between three planets feel finished.
We now know Metroid Prime 3 was, at one point, a big open world game that got into these little components. And so there was a part of me that wondered if they'd do that with Prime 4, just knowing that that's something they had been interested in the past. But it definitely seems like, based on what we've seen, as a Metroid Prime-ass Metroid Prime game, which is probably the right
Yeah.
Choice.
I was going to say that it seems hard to imagine that a thing they were interested in doing in 2007 matters in 2024.
Right.
But then this is the company that held on to Metroid Dread for how many years?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
One, and even just at Retro, like, there's very few people at Retro now that were there when Prime 3 was being made.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty, like, it's Kelbaugh, like, the guy in charge, and, like, maybe an artist.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. There's been a lot of turnover.
There's a huge exodus from that company.
I also found myself thinking a lot about what the game might have been before that big reset, mm-hmm. like 4 years ago. Yeah. How much of this is true to the original design and how much of it is a response to something that didn't work and they felt the need to start over.
Right. So to my understanding with that, and this is, I don't know, is it secret sources? Or
that's okay. It's not like there's any microphones on the table.
I know. Nobody's going to
hang on, let me
this.
Turn on the camera.
From what I heard with, like, the original version of Metroid Prime 4, which, like, the common thing out there was that it was, like a Bandai Namco studio in Singapore or something that was working on it, that, Tanabe was kind of direct, like, guiding this team.
Yeah.
Is I believe the original version of Metroid Prime 4 went in a very different direction. And I think part of the cause for concern was that, like, it kind of didn't feel like a Metroid Prime game.
You would think that after Other M, they would have learned a lesson.
Yeah.
Federation.
They did learn a lesson because they pulled the plug on the project.
Yeah. With Other M, I mean, like, Federation Force would probably be the bigger, better comparison here because Other M's in that space where, like, that's a different half of the Metroid pie because you do have, like, the Sakaguchi and Tanabe sides of it.
Sakamoto,
yeah. Too many names.
Too many names.
We had to go through. We were talking about. Now I'm blanking on.
Koizumi and the other guy that was on the draft.
With Tanabe and the original Metroid Prime 4, is that I think that was a much bigger, bolder. Like, we're gonna reinvent what Metroid Prime is, and I think the takeaway that Nintendo had, which. We won't know if it was fully the right decision because I don't think how much are we ever really going to see of that previous iteration of the game.
Yeah.
But I think probably the right decision is to, if you're going to make a new Metroid Prime, make it be a new Metroid Prime.
When you say reinvent, you mean like in the way that Breath of the Wild reinvented Zelda to some degree?
I have some suspicions that it might have been like more of a full open world game in that respect, whereas I'm feeling Beyond is going to... I think Beyond is going to be like, here is the format that Metroid Prime 1, 2, and 3 had, and have its tweaks on it. Maybe there's the time shifting side of it. You do have the psychic powers and stuff, but other than that, like, it's going to be like, go to planet, lose your abilities, find your abilities, go through areas, backtrack, find artifacts. Like,
I'm fully expecting this game to be the response similar to Metroid Prime 2 in the exact same way. Metroid Prime 2 was a response to Metroid Prime 1. This feels like a response to Metroid Prime 1 again, because it's been so long.
It's true. Well, that is the last Metroid Prime, kind of.
It is. Yeah. Also, the remaster makes it
right.
Exactly the case for that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's been so long since we've had one of these games that really the right way to do this is just to say, okay, well, let's just go back to the basics and then iterate one time. And that's kind of what Metroid Prime 2 also was, very much what it was.
Yeah.
So I'm walking into this expecting a alternate version of Metroid Prime 2.
And there is room to improve on Prime 2. So that's a good one to have an alternate version of. Yes.
We can tie in some comparison to Pikmin, and that like this does feel a little bit like how Pikmin 4 was kind of like, let's try Pikmin 2 again.
Yeah.
This feels like Metroid Prime 4 would be like, let's try Metroid Prime 2 again.
Yeah.
Neil, you said you think that this will play out like, I guess, all Metroid games where Samus is going to lose all her abilities and then recover them. Do you think that, considering, like, I don't know, the psychic abilities, the fact that we see a suit we've never seen before, it seems to me like I could see her going in and she's just adding to what she has. I don't know that we...
Is there a Metroid game where she hasn't been, like, zeroed out in the beginning?
Yeah, Metroid Prime 3, she kept all of her normal abilities and then she just got the grapple lasso.
Yeah.
And she made some friends.
Yeah.
That's important. Friendship.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, like maybe it could start with Metroid, like
still have the Metroid Prime 3. Still have the power beam.
And then, yeah, what if like this psychic stuff's only the start of it, or like what would be different applications of it that you're like hard to learning?
I mean, I think about like what was it like the Aether abilities in Samus Returns and Dread. Yeah. I forget the exact names of it, but there were like
there were like the psychic powers.
Yeah, like I think there's room to like kind of zero it out and then still have those new applications. I mean, if there's one thing that I could levy a mild complaint at, like, Samus Returns and, to a lesser extent, Dread, it's that kind of the consistent wheelhouse of, like, here are the abilities that you find, and the fact that, like, oh, these psychic things, like, some of it seems more interesting than others, but, like, I like seeing new abilities in my Metroid games. Like, I love getting the Screw Attack. It feels very good to get the Screw Attack, but, like, show me something more than just, like, here's the power bomb again.
Yeah.
How are we feeling about the psychic powers?
I think they're a little Metroid Prime 3E.
Yeah.
I don't mind. It basically just seems like tools to solve puzzles. And it is very funny seeing Nintendo's... I feel like Nintendo every now and then like has like this... Like it's different teams. So it's probably not like a purposeful thing. But I remember there was that era where like you had Twilight Princess, Super Paper Mario. And I feel like there was another game that like where they all had like that kind of like the weird black pixelated stuff coming in with like the Twilight Realm, Super Paper Mario. I forget, but like
Metroid Prime 2 did that.
Yeah, Metroid Prime 2. It was kind of like this is all kind of around the same era where I felt like there were things with a lot of similar stuff. Seeing Samus with the hand doing psychic abilities, it just made me think of Link in Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh yeah.
And I do look at that as far as like what is the hand in that, but an application to puzzle solve. Mm. And I mean that's what they show. It's an application to puzzle solve. Yeah. And I think when we were looking at the trailer again, someone was making it, I think we all kind of unanimously agreed that the little like slow motion shot, like, oh, that's going to slow down the game a lot. But I can also see that be something where, like, oh, if you do the shot in this way, you trigger a switch or you find some secret. It might not be a combat application as much as it could be a puzzle application.
I think fundamentally about how, like, underpowered a single shot is in a Metroid game.
Yeah.
Also, like, steering a single shot, to me, doesn't feel interesting. So like, it's
fire three shots in that time and just kill the enemies.
Right. It has to be something.
It's got to be something besides that.
Special.
It could be a more powerful shot. It didn't look like it was a missile or anything.
Definitely going to be one of those games where you have to like shoot a shot through a torch to see if it lights on fire or like starts something. Like this is going to be, it's going to be that kind of thing of like, oh, if this shot passes through the blue crystal, the shot turns blue and then you can light up this Krizoa statue.
I'll say this much. When they did the first reveal of Metroid Prime 4, I was excited because it had been a long time since we'd seen it, but fundamentally nothing about that game felt new.
Yeah.
The game that they showed. So I was excited, but also like there's a part of my brain that says, well, I mean, what'd you want? You wanted more Metroid Prime? You got more Metroid Prime. Eat your food. This feels different. I'm really excited about the ways in which it feels different. It feels like a Metroid Prime game, and it also feels like a Metroid Prime game we haven't seen before.
Yeah. Well, I do think it's like, I think it's okay to play it a little when you're first coming back to a franchise that you haven't touched
after 20 years or something.
Yeah. Like it's okay to like, I don't feel like that's necessarily the time to totally reinvent.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, you come in with the thing that people have been asking for.
And the Force Awakens.
Yeah. Like, and you give them exactly what they want.
Yep.
And then you screw it up with Last Jedi when you're done.
podcast over. Shut it down.
All right, guys. That's good. Hang out. I'm going to turn off the video. I need to point this out. 1986. That's when your favorite Metroid game...
And Metroid NES came out.
Yeah, 1986. 2002 is when Metroid Prime came out. That's a gap of 16 years. It has been 23 years since Metroid Prime 1. It has been 18 years since Metroid Prime 3. So that means by the time Metroid Prime 4 comes out, it will be 2 years longer than the gap between NES Metroid and Metroid
That's
Prime.
That's crazy to think.
I think what you're saying is they should remake Metroid 1, and I'm here for it.
I mean, they have.
And it was for real, though.
Last time, so we have a 100% success rate of remaking Metroid 1.
I'd be okay.
Every time we've remade it so far, it's been a great game.
Yeah, I'd be okay with them remaking it and skipping the Zero Mission stealth shit. because that slows the game way down.
They're always like, let's
add Emmy robots.
Let's add cutscenes. Nope.
Just make it hard as shit.
Yeah.
That could be a toggle in the options menu.
Should
make that vertical shaft dark.
Taller.
Super boring.
You randomize the map every single time. And that's it.
I think we've danced around it enough. We need to get to the most important thing. Will Samus have a really hot black and red Zero suit? Zach, I'll start with you.
I'd play it.
Great.
Yeah, the red suit looks sick.
The red suit looks sick.
It really does. Will we see your face in this
game? You know, that's actually a weirdly interesting question, is if we do see, well, when we see Samus's face after you beat it in however much time, do they, when they remastered Prime 1, they stuck with realistic Samus, who was not in Prime 2 and Prime 3.
Prime 2 and Prime 3 were like 18-year-old weird-looking Samus.
So which Samus is Prime 4? Is she real Samus or is she cartoon Samus?
I want her to please be let real it be Samus. Samus.
They can go with Sony's approach and make her look like Tobey Maguire.
Tom Holland.
Either way.
Yeah.
I think Tobey Maguire would make a really hot Samus.
Yes.
It's good black.
Kirsten Dunst could be Psylocke.
Hell yeah.
Psylocke wasn't in this trailer.
No, he wasn't.
I like that first trailer was that it really highlights that first trailer was them going, yes, we are in fact doing Psylocke for real this time. And then he's nowhere to be seen. Psylocke, he's going to be in that one cutscene.
Yeah, he'll be at the very end.
He's going to show up pre-credits and get shot in the head.
That shot of him walking through the door with the Metroids behind him is the ending shot of Prime 4. And he's never appeared in it. It cuts to black and like Prime 5.
Brief, because we did talk about like wanting another remake of Metroid 1. As we are looking at Prime 4, and hope to God it comes out soon. I just want to play the damn game. Brief, unrelated but related sojourn. It has been almost 4 years since Metroid Dread came out.
Is that real?
Yeah,
really.
Fall 2001.
Neil's just dropping all the dates tonight.
Yeah, trying to make you all feel old.
I could have sworn that was 2022.
No, was it? Yeah, it was 20. Right.
Which
when was Dread?
Dread
was 2021.
2021.
Yeah,
October. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
So we're almost 4 years from that. Like. Hopefully, Prime 4 comes out in the next 6 months, but then we're within the spitting distance of a new 2D Metroid.
Can somebody explain to me the end of Metroid Dread? She's just cured of her Metroid disease?
No, she is the Metroid disease. We'll replay Dread after this podcast.
Maybe. Let's play some Dread. What do we think if Mercury's team is indeed working on another 2D Metroid, which they should be?
Yeah.
They are working on another game right now.
Yeah, I did see.
Which looks like the beautiful 7.5.
I want them to throw away all the existing Metroid lore, keep the fundamental mechanics and the Metroids themselves, and just tell a new story.
I mean, we can always squeeze something into the 2 days between any Metroid game. That may be why there's going to be timey-wimey stuff in this, is they figured out, somebody brought up the timeline and went, all of Metroid Prime takes place within the span of like 7 hours? Yes.
I've always
to fix that.
I've always wanted a Metroid game that takes place on Chozo when she's growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought that would be so cool.
Mm-hmm. That'd be awesome.
I think fundamentally I don't need to know more about Samus. I want the games to be good. I don't need lore. I don't really want cutscenes from these games. I don't really want... Like, I'm fundamentally attached in video games, I guess, is part of the problem.
What did you think about the stuff in Dread?
It was well delivered. I didn't need it.
All
right,
yeah.
Like,
that's fair.
It was uninterested.
That's, like...
In a very non-Sakamoto... kind of writing way.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever referred to Sakamoto's writing as unobtrusive before.
Let me show you a game called Ennio.
Yeah.
And that's when you get the full Sakamoto.
Just like in the face.
I still don't really need the whole Adam character at all. None of that does anything for me. What I like about Metroid is a very powerful space girl on Dangerous Planet goes and shoots many, many things and explores corridors until she finds all of the energy tanks and then escapes before the timer is up.
I think that's what, like, with Dread, and it's a thing that I both Like, I mean, I think Dread is my favorite Metroid game, I think.
I think it might be mine.
Really?
It's a, maybe NES Metroid.
But like
I was going to say.
But the thing is, like, I mean, I think I can speak for John in that we are Metroid lore dorks.
Sure.
And Dread really fed into that a lot. Like, y'all figured out a fucking language.
Yeah,
like,
when the aliens started talking in the Prime 4 trailer, I was just like, oh, God.
Not again.
That's not Chozo. That's another one.
Dread has the lore stuff, has the cutscenes, deepens things, you know, has ties the same as
the past. But it's entirely opt-in.
But, like, that's what I like about it, is that, like, there is an extent of, like, from my vantage point, like, I kind of wish they leaned in more to it, but I think they did a very good job of balancing the people like you, who kind of don't really give a crap about it, and also satisfying the people like me and John, who are just like, did you see what they said?
Yeah.
I think they, I mean, FromSoft sort of has perfected this. They make all these games with all this deep lore, and I won none of it. But I love those games. I enjoy the hell out of those games, but fundamentally, I couldn't tell you a goddamn thing that happened in any of them, other than I was cool.
I like that she spoke Chozo in that game.
There were good moments. I liked the cutscenes in Dread. I liked the story in Dread. I didn't need more of it. If it hadn't been there, I wouldn't have missed it.
I think it was a really good balance. That's nice to hear your perspective on it. Yeah. Someone who doesn't care about it. It met in the middle of satisfying those who want story and those who don't.
Yeah, 100%.
Hopefully they do that with Prime 4.
I would love a reality in which Metroid is successful enough to have both the Metroid where you're just running around shooting stuff and a Metroid where I'm young Samus on Chozo planet. And it's like mostly story.
Chozo
like,
Farm Simulator.
Yeah. Like, I want the franchise to do well enough.
Give me the Metroid cozy game.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I play it. I'll play anything with the Metroid brand on it. I don't know when that became such my like obviously my favorite series. It's after I met all of you people. I liked Metroid growing up, but I think really it was. God, I think it was around the time of the Prime trilogy that I really clicked that how much I liked that game.
Me too.
Maybe it was listening to John talking about how much I like Super Metroid and RFN. I don't know.
NWR does sort of beat you over the head with Metroid. You like it no matter.
I think my stance on Metroid Prime has only improved since when I started writing.
I was worried when the remaster came out of like, I wonder if this is aged. And I was like, oh God, it's so flawless. It's perfect.
I mean, I had that moment where like I played the NES Metroid and it didn't really click for me, but it was like in my early 2000s era where I was like just looking for Super Nintendo cartridges wherever I could, and I found Super Metroid, and at that point I had not played it.
Oh.
And that was the thing where like I put that into the Super Nintendo and it was like the gates opened up because I was like, this is like a Super Nintendo game from a decade ago that is the most like moody atmospheric thing I have ever seen, and like nothing to that point in the early 2000s had really captured like that quiet silent vibe.
What I would say is that I don't think anybody should go out of their way to play Metroid 1. There are better Metroid games that are more likely to be worth your time in 2025. But if you were interested in playing Metroid 1 and just like the age of the game was a big turnoff, there's a PC, I guess you call it a remaster of Metroid 1 called Metroid Planets. It's got a randomizer built in. It's got completely redone animation with the same basic sprite work.
That's cool.
And it's got a mini map. It's got all these quality of life improvements. So if you're interested in experiencing Metroid 1, but like a version of Metroid 1 that doesn't feel like it's 75 years old, that's an option for you.
Well, speaking of Metroid,
are we?
If we have to.
Was there an Nintendo Direct or was it just a Metroid trailer?
Speaking of Metroid, because this is the only thing I can segue into from here, Pac-Man. Did any of you watch the Amazon Secret Levels Pac-Man? Okay.
Do we need to like pause and go watch
So the thing that watching this trailer revealed is that was a backdoor pilot for this game. But I'm also worried that by watching that, I have spoiled the plot of this game for myself. Because, like, based on the trailer, I'm like, oh, they don't want me to know some things that I know about these characters. So, like, I guess if you haven't seen it and you're interested, it, what is the game called?
Shadow Labyrinth.
Consume Darkness.
Which I keep thinking of, what was the Xbox 360 Metroidvania by the dude who everyone
Shadow likes? Complex.
Yeah. Thank you. I thought it was a sequel to that when they first announced it.
I was very, like, when it came up in this direct, I forgot about the weird Pac-Man, like, futuristic. Serious Metroidvania.
But I guess if you're interested in this and you have not seen the Amazon Secret Levels episode about Pac-Man, maybe don't watch it.
Does Miss Pac-Man die in it?
I'll bet the girl is Miss Pac-Man the whole
There are plot twists in there that I think are going to matter.
Does the ghost show up?
Kinda. Listen, I have opinions on Amazon Secret Levels series. In that all of them are badly written, and all of them are clearly wanting to be like full-length series that they only wrote 10 minutes of.
The Warhammer one was good.
They all have this structure of, like, you set up your characters, you set up your plot, the characters walk toward the door and open it to go into the plot, and it cuts to black.
That's true.
And that's every single, like, the Mega Man one, I was, like, into.
It's like 7 minutes long.
Yeah, and it, like, it's like Mega Man being like, I can fight those robots. And Dr. Light is like, okay. And then the music plays and he puts on the armor and you're like, hell yes. And he's like, I'm Mega Man. And then it cuts to black. And I'm like, I wanted to see him shoot a robot.
My friend Marcus described it as the intro to the TV series that they want to make.
Right. Which I'm like, this is a really good, same with the D&D one was the same way, where I'm like, this is a good pitch for something I would love to watch one day.
Yeah.
You should have made that instead. Anyway,
why did Tiamat come out of a golden dragon? That bugged me.
I will say that is a different flavor of D&D than the D&D I play. That's like dark, grungy edgelord D&D, and I'm like high fantasy fun D&D. So it didn't.
Fuck yeah.
It didn't work for me.
D&D where I could be a naked bard named Shulk who plays a flute.
Yes.
Perish in the chasm.
I want to knock a guy named Jarnathan out the window.
Exactly. That's
a good D&D.
Yeah. All that to say, I'm kind of interested in the Pac-Man Metroid game.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to play this.
Is it going to be good? I don't know. Like, it looks really like out there and weird.
What they should have done, instead of calling it Shadow Labyrinth, what really would have thrown people off and got some attention is the title screen comes up and it just says Pac-Man World 4. After showing that screen. And it's just like,
they could have gone with a subtitle like The Rise of Inky.
Yeah,
I do like that there are no
Metroidvania.
Unless you're looking when the dude morph balls into Pac-Man and eats some dots.
There's no idea.
There's no real like, hey,
they're
Pac-Man.
Not leaning into the brand of Pac-Man.
No, they're afraid of Pac-Man.
He's
like, real. Why would you make this game if you're afraid of Pac-Man?
Right. Yeah, it's...
What are you doing?
Pac-Man got added to Super Monkey Ball.
Like, it feels like a game they already had on the shelf, and they just decided that they wanted a Pac-Man branding opportunity.
But I believe the actual origin for this is that, like, Bandai Namco was like, hey guys, pitch weird versions of our popular characters.
The Dig Dug reboot.
One of the three forms, according to this press release, is Swordsman number 8. So I look forward to playing Swordsman number 8.
One of the three forms is... So you can't possibly have all the swordsmen.
No, you can't. As you navigate this alien maze, you will shift between the three alien... You'll shift between three different forms, jumping and slashing as the agile Swordsman 8, exploring in classic Pac-Man style as Mini-Puck, and unleashing devastating power as the mecha construct Gaia.
What Gaia?
Classic Pac-Man shit.
Yeah.
It's all Swordsman 1 through 7 in the Amazon show? Is that the spoiler?
I'm looking at the Pac-Man wiki right now. So it's Swordsman number 8, first appearance, Shadow Labyrinth. His protagonist is Shadow Labyrinth. He is a cloaked soul summoned without his memories or body to a mysterious planet by his Funkbot guide Puck.
I have to say, I was really hoping you were going to say, like, first appearance was, like, Pac-Mania or something.
Pac-Man World 2.
Puck's first appearance is Secret Level.
Yep. The Swordsman is in Secret... Like, we may have to watch Secret Level if you don't mind spoiling Pac-Man.
Have I not made it clear by stance on story in video games? I will skip every cutscene.
Listen, I mean, I understand that...
Wait, this is voiced by, like, the armorer? From Mandalorian? It's voiced by Emily Swallow. I think that's the...
For Puck?
Yeah, Puck, voiced by Emily Swallow from The Armorer, from The Mandalorian.
Nice. That's what it's her doing.
Yeah. Well, you gotta get the top tier for that.
Yeah. She also did a voice in the Castlevania show.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Was she the voice of Puck in the Amazon series?
Yes, that's okay. Where she was the voice of Puck.
Okay. Oh, I thought you were talking about in Shadow Labyrinth. Are they? I'd be curious if they're keeping the cast from the Amazon series for the game adaptation.
I don't know.
The Castlevania show is, what if we just made this Game of Thrones?
Huh.
But Castlevania.
Isn't the new season have like a different name or something?
So, well, they're on a different Castlevania game. Yeah, the first one was Castlevania 3, and now they're on Rondo.
Rondo, yeah.
So how many seasons is the first one?
Three.
And Nocturne's a clean break.
It's like a different show. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a continuation.
And I hate the voice actor they have for, what's the main character? Richter?
Yeah.
Is that... Yeah.
Okay.
I hate the animation style. It just
I can
me.
Suffer through the animation, but like that voice was not at any point when I looked at that character what I thought was going to come out of his face.
I didn't like the voice actor for Alucard either.
I was okay with Alucard. I was fine with, is Trevor the main character from season one? Yeah.
He was a little too... Yeah.
Guys, the voice acting sucks. The animation sucks. You guys really sell me on the Castlevania show.
Here's what I'll say. I didn't make it through the first show.
I only made it halfway through the first season.
Yeah. But, like, conceptually, it was the first show, their first arc, the Castlevania 3 one, was interesting because it was like, oh, they're taking this NES game that barely has a plot and, like, weaving what plot there is into a show. And that's pretty neat.
Yeah. And then it kept making.
And then it kept going. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I stopped caring.
Now they're just making it up.
Yeah. Yeah, before they were loosely making it up.
Yeah.
A thing that didn't keep going was Tomodachi Life.
Oh. Good segue.
Damn. Why are they making another Tomodachi Life?
I mean, like,
because the gays need a Tomodachi Life.
So it's Tomodachi Life Living the Dream is the subtitle, I believe. It's coming out in 2026. It was the end one game announcement because they announced an app for some reason at the end of the show. But Tomodachi Life Living the Dream will be the first Tomodachi game in over a decade.
Yeah.
I think technically...
It looks a little better than the 3DS game, but not
that
much.
That's okay, so we were talking about how like Prime 4 looks beautiful, Pokemon Legends Z to A, whatever it is, but like, that looks like crap. Like, Tomodachi Life doesn't need to look any better than it does. Like, that game is just the weird fishbowl game.
Yeah, that's true.
It's you go look at your aquarium, and hopefully, like, the boys kiss and the girls kiss. Like,
there is a quote from Nintendo after. So, if you're a young listener, or you somehow missed the controversy of Tomodachi Life, what was it? There was a bug, in quotes, in the Japanese version where you could be gay.
Yeah.
And they patched it out for the US version, and people were like, but gay people exist. Nintendo was like, oops. And Nintendo's official quote, their statement on it...
From 2013 or 2014.
Yeah, was, we pledge... They're pledging. We pledge that if we create a next installment in the Tomodachi series, we will strive to design a gameplay experience from the ground up that is more inclusive... and better represents all players. And for a long time, the joke was, that's why they're never making another Tomodachi Life. But now they are.
Yeah.
Can Tomodachi Life is gay?
Will Tomodachi Life say gay? I was, before the show, and a little bit during it, when you guys were talking about Castlevania or whatever, I was trying to see like if there's been any word out there, or like anything out in the internets talking about Tomodachi Life, and like, has there been any official comment about Nintendo being like, yes, the gays are in? And no, there has not. There's not been an official comment, but it seems like people are taking the end of that trailer where they just have like the big women talking to the big women talking.
I mean,
like, and there is like, I could see why you would see them and be like, oh, it's a subtle wink to like the girls are gonna kiss. Like,
Listen, the sexual tension in that scene, you could cut it with a knife.
I will say, I have seen many beautiful, beautiful images on the internet of a very, very big character and a very, very tiny character. And they get up to some things, let me tell you. Yeah, so,
that is being inclusive of people's lifestyles. We're going to have... You know, any gender can kiss each other. Also, any height.
I just want to be eaten.
Is that such a that's my snoo-snoo.
I don't think I even know what this game or any of the previous games in the series even are. What is the
game? It's an aquarium.
It's a fishbowl.
But yeah, what is the part of the game where you make a decision and things are
you make? It's an aquarium.
You make your own Mii's. Populate the town with them, and
you can like you do have like some like interactions with them, and like
they mini games,
yeah, like they like pair off and meet up, and there's really like silly weird stuff that like happens with that, and it all has like the modulated voice box stuff, so like your characters talk to you, and they pair off and get married.
You don't really play it.
It's not really much of a game, is it?
No,
no, it's. It's weird. It's really entertaining for a day.
Yeah.
Like, the time that I spent playing Tomodachi Life, I was like, this is crazy.
And then you eventually just see all
and then
all
you
the
kind
things.
Of run out of it.
Yeah.
And then you stop playing.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I want the voices from Tomodachi Life to read the articles in the new Nintendo News app. I would download the news app if that was the future. Sorry, Andy.
You're on hunger strike until they do.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that, like, at some point, maybe, like, a year or a little over a year ago, my, like, young teenage kid asked me if I knew what that game was. I think she came across it on TikTok. They must have a strong presence of Tomodachi Life on
TikTok.
It
is very, like,
meme-able.
I mean, it is a game of memes that is then also...
And I looked at her like, why are you asking me about a 3DS game that came out when you were, like, one?
Yeah.
My favorite memory of Tomodachi Life... I was making all my friends and characters, my local friends, and
did you call your friends characters?
Yeah, Hunter and Eric.
Oh, I see. And I showed one to one of my female friends, and she said, "Can you make her boobs bigger?" This is, I swear to God, and I said, "No."
They patched that out.
We were both disappointed about that.
It was localized by the Xenoblade X team. Patched that slider out from the character creation menu.
Yeah, all my friends were living in this fishbowl together, and they'd throw things at each other, and there's like a boat thing. I forget.
This is a game that cost like $10, right?
No, it's a full-price game.
It's a full-price game.
It's like, honestly, like, it spent a lot of time with this.
Yeah, awesome. Me too. Yeah. And like, in the week it came out, it was pretty huge.
Yeah.
Like,
all over
everybody who was anybody was playing Tomodachi.
Yeah. But then we all stopped at about this time.
Right, because we all ran out of things to do. That's the end of, like, my... What do y'all...
The rhythm section here.
No,
right. Instead of the Necro Dancer, which I literally downloaded before we started recording. We'll have to bust it out this weekend. Patapon, Rhythm Heaven coming back.
Rhythm Heaven!
So with Rhythm Heaven, it was the...
guys.
Zach just ripped his shirt off. He's trying to get down the
rhythm.
He keeps just jumping through imaginary
circles. Patapon!
Whoa, you go, big guy!
We have to talk about the virtual game card stuff, too.
But with Rhythm Heaven, it was where there is a, I'm blanking on the name of the musical artist who was responsible for, like, a lot of the music and the design of the Rhythm Heaven games. He had, I think, some sort of, like, I don't know if it's a cancer or a problem with his vocal cords.
Oh.
But during the direct, they made a big deal over, like, and he's coming back to do the music for those games. So, like, that was another thing, like it's a cool thing about this and Tomodachi Life is that they were both kind of properties that there was reason to believe they were dead.
Yeah.
And they're not. That's cool.
I think it's kind of just nice to see them reaching towards, like, the back row of their IP.
Yeah.
This last
switch. I was going to say, it is very...
Well, not under the table.
With something like Star Fox, as soon as Starlink had Star Fox content in it, I was like, that's the best we're getting. This like two generations in a row where they acknowledge Star Fox. That hasn't happened since the GameCube, so I'll take it. But it is very classic, like late gen Nintendo scrounging for stuff that's left while all of their good teams are like making things for the next system. And now it's like, what else do we have that we own?
Isn't this kind of weird though? Because we're on the verge of the Switch 2 likely getting announced that it's releasing probably this summer or at least this year.
Yeah.
So this doesn't feel like we're like a year out from the next system just trying to like scrounge. I mean, this game will probably come out after the Switch 2, right?
Oh, yeah.
Tomodachi Life and whatchamacallit, Rhythm Heaven 100% will be out.
Yeah.
But also, let's look at it this way of the Switch sold 150 million plus units. Like, you're not gonna, like, it's, you look at Sony with PS4 and PS5.
Oh, I'm not saying PS4 is like not,
but
yeah.
The games that are being announced, Prime 4 kind of notwithstanding, what was the other, Pokemon was the other 2025 game, but there were the two new announcements. Tomodachi Life is kind of a good late-gen game because that is going to be the, probably go a little more like, maybe not casual, because I feel like you still need to like be into weird shit to like that game.
Like big people?
Yeah, like big people and big people with little people.
Breakdancing.
Yeah. But like, it's a weird, quirky, viral game that I think there's probably some sound logic on Nintendo's behalf that like, you put this out on a system that has a huge install base,
yeah,
and it really could have a word of mouth thing. Yeah, it's not like
it won't be able to be played on Switch 2.
Well, I feel like if you want anybody to talk about this game, you announce it now and not when everyone's talking about, you know, Odyssey 2 or Switch 2 Hardware.
But I think that's why this direct happened.
Yeah. I'm just surprised.
That's been a week of people talking about these games before it's. Yeah.
I think it would have been better to do this one like a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, sure. But, a couple weeks ago or a couple weeks from now.
Yeah.
But doing it within the week of the direct is wild.
True.
Like, it's still weird. It's so weird.
Well, doing it back in February would have been a great move.
And the way it was announced with like 24 hours notice, too, it almost feels like someone forgot to push it back.
Like, this was supposed to happen in February, and somebody was like, whatever happened to that direct? And somebody's like, oh, shit. Like,
I bet they're tightening up that news app. They had to get that out.
As we were thinking about, like, oh, like, if there was, and I know Nintendo's marketing schedule is usually the people talk about how, like, the direct was pushed back a week, like, now the stuff is, like, set in stone. Like, they have these quarters in advance. But, like, with this one, it could have been the fact that, like, this is me throwing nonsense into the wind that the Nintendo Today News app, it could have been something like that where they're like, oh, we want to shadow drop this.
Close it.
It's not ready to go yet.
Yeah.
We kind of need a little, this is just spitballing, or even maybe it's a virtual game thing. Maybe they're like, we don't know exactly how, we need to have this in place before we announce it and then have it ready to go out.
I think the thing that, I'm thinking more about the virtual card thing, like, why would they not just make this a Switch 2 function and make it part of next week's thing? Like, why? Yeah,
because they want people to go across both.
It's not exciting. I think they want to focus on like big new stuff. So this kind of system.
They've already announced the backwards compatibility of Switch 2 to kind of get that out of the way. Like, really, next week should be like, here's a crap load of games. Here's the release date.
The boring answer is probably that both of these systems use the same infrastructure.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And I guess you could announce it next week.
It just feels like it's a platform announcement. So why would you have a direct that's next week specifically to talk about a new platform and not include all of your platform announcements in that?
Maybe it is just to keep next week's not boring.
Yeah, high energy. I mean, that would be like the classic, I don't know, Nintendo E3 presentation where like we're rolling, everything's great, and then we get a Wii Music. Like,
We're going to talk about the vitality.
I think people are really interested in like a change to the way game sharing works. I think that would drive a lot of people. Maybe it's just me, but
I have a question about that. Maybe we can talk about it next. Why wouldn't they have done this much, much sooner? for the Wii.
Or because they're a weird company that operates like a decade behind everybody else.
Well, and there's a new console coming out, so theoretically people will have a Switch and a Switch 2 probably.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's some of the... I think that answers why...
Also play a Switch 2.
Yeah. I mean, I do think like that's part of the reason why I think it was tied more to a Switch 1 announcement as opposed to a Switch 2 announcement, because I think they want to drive home that, like, this is a thing that we are adding to the current thing that will also apply. They'll probably mention it next week that, like, this is going to apply to the future one. And there might be some stipulations with that.
And probably, to your point, John, the only reason they're even doing this on Switch 1 is because it's easier to do it than to not do it.
Yeah. Right, like, they obviously, they seemingly share an eShop. They probably share elements of their operating system, like... It's
probably
it's,
a lot of elements, honestly.
It is sort of the first Nintendo generation that's been this seemingly correctly tied together. Like, there's weird stuff, like, you know, like, the 3DS still has access to the DSi shop somehow. Yeah. Like, there's that kind of stuff.
But it's fragmented.
This feels like... Like, no, it's the same account system. It's the same, like...
This is iPad and iPad 2.
Right.
Yeah.
Not
right.
3DS and DS.
Right. It's it's what Xbox and PlayStation have been doing for... decades.
Yeah. It's a decade behind.
Right, Nintendo just got here.
And I think fundamentally there are a lot of people that don't want Nintendo to operate in this fashion because it makes them just another technology company.
Oh, yeah.
I disagree with that take, but I also kind of understand why. What makes Nintendo special is that they're not just another technology company.
It really, I mean, this is in a matter of business days. We're going to find out. Mm-hmm. Because I guess somewhat agree to disagree with the, like I want Nintendo to be weird, but I think they can still, I mean, they just announced a new Tomodachi Life with big people talking to people. Like, I hope that Nintendo can still be weird while operating more like an Apple in the way that they're putting out their consoles. I just worry that like, it's basically going to be, like, too... graphs where they're becoming more like Apple and they're getting less weird, and we're going to hit some kind of point where those lines cross and I'm going to be sad.
I think it's easy to think that maybe that was an Iwata thing, and the further we get away from Iwata's influence on the company, the closer we get to them just being a Japanese version of Apple.
Yeah.
And I like that technology approach, but I don't need it from every company that I buy products from.
Yeah.
And I really like Nintendo operating in a world in which they're the only company that exists. Like, I like that about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think, I mean, seemingly the Switch 2, the Joy-Con are mice. So, like, it's not like the Switch 2 is just Switch with better graphics. Like,
they still got some weird.
Yep. There's a mysterious button that we don't know what it does.
Fire button.
You press this button, it's someone that you know will die, but you'll get $1 million.
Yep, but you get 10 gold coins.
You'll be able to redeem them for $1.
Yep.
But you almost think they would have, like, if they had a replacement for the gold coin thing, you almost think they would have paired that with the Switch virtual card thing. Get all the
I think that might be why they got rid of gold coins.
Oh, yeah.
That might be a direct connection, because now here's a different way of which...
They're rewriting the code base anyway.
Yeah.
Well, the gold coins could also tie into general price changes for the games themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some developer, like, wrote an email to the corporate office and said, hey, did you know that I can, by just commenting out this line of code, I can get you, like, an extra few million a year? Oh, yeah. Really? Cool. Yeah.
You can make more money with a flop than with a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything else from this? Oh, let's talk about that Marvel game.
Oh, well, do we have any more about the virtual game card stuff? Or
we can go, let's go.
There's two fundamental things I kind of feel like I don't know yet. One is this retroactively applying to all my digital virtual Switch games?
So, this, I mean, you were in the car with me when I was looking into this all and saying and being like, wow.
Did we get an answer?
Yes.
Oh, I don't think
so. I'll give credit of that. Like, I first was like asking around to see, like, Patrick Klebeck did a good job of reporting this on his crossplay blog, of kind of digging into it. Crossplay is Patrick Klebeck's, like, parenting and gaming thing that he's got. It's pretty neat. He's doing a bunch of things about, like, parental controls on different consoles. Actually talked to somebody from PlayStation about it. But with Nintendo, he reached out and tried to get some clarification about the virtual card stuff, and it is a system level selection. Like, you go into the settings on the console, and you can toggle between the current way of sharing, where like data. Like it's, if you like, you have a primary system on a secondary system, you can play things just on your account on your primary system. Anybody can play it on the account. You can go from that level to, or switch the console over to be the virtual game card experience. And as far as I know, you can kind of switch that back and forth. It's just that when you do, it kind of invalidates how. And so, like, if you were to switch over to the virtual game card thing, loan somebody a game, and then switch back, their access would be cut off.
That's weird to me even at the system level, though, because what if you opted on one system and don't opt in on another system?
I think, but in order for them to work together, they need to both be opted into the same thing, okay. I believe.
That still doesn't necessarily...
It's very confusing.
So, I did hear you say that earlier. You're basically saying that when you opt in at a system level, every digital game that you bought becomes under the umbrella of that new platform.
I think so. It is...
And then the follow-up question is then, is it every digital game, or just digital games that have a card game?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, is it Crypt of the Necrodancer, or is it Mario 3D World?
Yeah.
I think it's everything, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to, like, play those games on a different system at all if you opted into the game card.
Yeah,
like, that's a approach. Yeah. So it has to.
Because
that would imply that they're keeping both systems around and they're not.
Yeah, I think if there was a world where like both systems kind of work together, then sure. But I think with this one, like they've only shown it with other retail Nintendo games. But I would assume just by like thinking about how the system works, that it would apply to everything.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to wait and see. I mean, that's happening soon, right? When did you say April? Okay, yeah, so that's rolling out soon, and then we'll find out, and we'll see if we can find any way to break it.
And I also, like, I hope, like, when you... it doesn't look like it's going to be like that, because Nintendo's not as much fun like that. Come back, Iwata. I really... it'd be cool if, like, Pikmin took your car and brought it to the other system.
I showed that to my boss the other day, because he had never seen that transfer process for the Wii to Wii U.
Or 3DS?
The Wii to Wii U one is better.
Yeah, the Wii.
I prefer the cinematic experience that is transferring a Wii to a Wii U. It has like multiple camera angles.
Aren't they like picking up pieces?
Yeah,
like pick up pieces. They like go through this whole world.
Yeah.
And then they load them onto a spaceship and you put it on your Wii U and the spaceship lands and they unload it. It is the most work that was ever put into a Wii U product. Probably like less than 100 people ever pushed that button. Like, realistically.
That's something I want to see with the Switch, too. I know we're saying that the operating system or the look of it might be the same or very similar, but I want those extra bells and whistles, because I miss that. Or even be able to have, like, backgrounds in the menu, you know?
Listen, you can have white and black.
Two backgrounds.
Yeah.
So, that would be nice to see some of that get put back.
I'm not that's going to happen.
No,
like that. I mean, that's getting away. That's like getting away from the weird Nintendo, which I think there's good things to come out of that, because like, I mean, granted, the eShop is like, you open that up and you're like, all right, I can go make a sandwich and come back and then look at one game.
I hope the eShop's a little better.
The key is to make sure you close all anything else that's running before you open the eShop. It makes a huge difference.
I'll bet it does.
Interesting,
but. Like 3DS by the end of this run, like that was a very slow OS to use, and a lot of that is because of all the fun bells and whistles, which I loved and I miss, but like I can understand why Nintendo in a post Wii U world where less than 100 people probably saw the Pikmin come over are just like, why are we wasting time on this?
Why do we
just
have
make it a black background or white background?
Why do we have a unique soundtrack for the parental controls menu that's great?
Yeah.
Like, you're just listening to the Wii U system soundtrack. It's by Totaka and it's fantastic. Yeah. It's so good. It's some of his best work.
The Wii Shop Bling.
The best thing
that Drake has ever done outside of getting dunked on by Kendrick Lamar.
Have you ever looked at the list of just how many Wii U eShop music themes there are?
It is baffling.
It's like one per quarter for the entire life of the thing, which wasn't a long period, but it's so much music, and it's all original, and it's all great. And there's two versions of it, one for the gamepad and one for the TV.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
It's so stupid and such a waste of money.
I don't want that company to leave.
Yeah.
They're leaving, guys.
Yeah.
This is a different world.
It's objectively a bad choice, but please do it anyway.
I just miss all the Miis running to the games.
They run out to the game, and then you see a little quote above them. Mm-hmm. It's like, why do my parents hit me?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Why is everybody playing Funky Bars? Yeah.
Let's talk about that Marvel thing and then be done, unless there's other things you want to talk about.
I have something I want to talk about first.
What do you want to talk about?
What's going on with this bag of granola bar debris?
Oh, I've been wondering that myself.
Where did that come from?
From my backpack.
You want to talk about it?
Is that the granola you didn't like and kick around?
When I bought train sacks at Target, I bought oatmeal raisin cookies.
Sure.
And I grabbed three of them and put them in this bag.
Yep. I'm so far with you. It's the next part of the story that I'm most interested in.
Well, I didn't know where to put them, so I threw them in my backpack, and they got crushed by, I don't know, a controller probably.
Okay. Somebody got to go to Target today. Jeez.
Actually, I don't think it was Target. I think it was somewhere else.
Okay.
But, John, get a picture of that. We're going to need that in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure. It's
too... Wait, turn on the camera.
Yeah.
It's granola bars. And devastated over the raisin cookie.
Hold it up, Andy. Let me have him get a picture. Your granola shame.
I ate two of the three.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. Alright, that's all I had. Yo,
Captain
America throws a shoe
and
shit.
Yeah.
By the Shredder's Revenge team.
Yeah, so Marvel Cosmic Invasion that we were really hoping would be a shadow drop because we really
I'm like, man, this would be the perfect game to have while we're all in the same
room. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's Marvel Cosmic Invasion, which is seemingly extremely inspired by both Shredder's Revenge, because it's the same team, and even the old 90s X-Men arcade game that we will hopefully be able to play with five players all the way through at the Galloping Ghost Arcade tomorrow.
Our sponsor this week.
Yeah.
You can have five players, I reckon.
It's a six player. And the machine that they had last year was a six player machine.
Oh, wow.
Because it's got all the screens.
Yeah.
I love that game so much.
It's a good game. Too many alligators in that game. But it's
published by Donnie New, developed by Tribute Games, and they did the
Mercenary Kings.
Oh, yeah, they did do Mercenary Kings back in the day. Streets of Rage 4 and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge, which. This looks extremely like Shredder's Revenge, which I think is the best beat 'em up I've ever played.
Me too.
So yeah. Good.
Wait, did Tribute do Streets of Rage 4? I thought that was a different developer.
I know.
Because that's a very different art style from Scott Tribute.
Pilgrim. They did do Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, they did.
Scott Pilgrim is a very good developer.
Not so great I want to buy it twice after they pull it off of my account when it got taken down the first time.
I got it for $5.
They do Wizor, Mercenary Kings, Curses and Chaos, Flint Hook
really good.
Panzer Paladin.
Yes.
Okay. Worked on Streets of Rage 4.
Okay. Mm.
I blamed that on, I think, someone online when I was looking at that mentioned, like, oh, it's also about the Team Ninja Streets of Rage 4. Okay. That's incorrect. The Team Ninja Streets of Rage 4 Guard Crush is the main team behind that.
That game also extremely good.
Really good, yeah.
Yeah. One level. Marvel Cosmic Invasion, they've announced about six characters so far, I think.
All of which we can name right now.
Captain America, let's go around.
Hero Bell.
Storm. Storm's in it.
Wolverine.
Spider-Man. I said Wolverine first.
Venom.
Shit.
Nova.
Oh, yeah, Nova, yeah.
I think somebody said seven.
Yeah.
Six? Seven? I don't know. I can't count right now. But it's four player online, which local and online, which I kind of hope hope they bump up like they did with Shredder's Revenge, Shredder's Revenge.
I thought I was worried at first that it wasn't even going to be four player because they were focusing so much on like a duo.
I had to rewind the direction to be like, okay, they did say four.
Yeah.
I thought they said like, oh, it's only, you know,
just two.
It's just so early in development, they don't have the four player. Yeah. And yet they can only show two people at a time.
But they also, I do like the mechanic that they showed off where it's almost like there's a Marvel versus Capcom element to it. Where when you're playing by your, or I think you can do this with, you might be able to do two groups of two, I don't know. But they showed when you were playing by yourself, definitely, where you would basically pick two characters and switch between. And they also would have those moments like in a Marvel versus Capcom game where the second character would jump in and like they would just do it. Like that's something I love because you have the combinations between the different characters. It allows you to like vary up a little bit. Like thinking about this team's past game, Shredder's Revenge, like it would be cool. It's like, oh, I could, you know, be playing as Leonardo and then have Casey Jones come in. Like I just like that as a good way to play with the license, vary up the gameplay a little bit, have it a little more customizable to a degree.
You know, we didn't talk about Hot Shots Golf.
What do you have to say about Hot Shots Golf?
It looks good as hell.
Everybody's gone
done.
Hot Shots looks like Golf. A hole.
I'm very excited about it. I love that series.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Got that.
Good coverage of Hot Shots.
F-O-R-E. Oh, Andy. I forgive you for the granola bar.
I don't need your forgiveness.
I did it on purpose. I'm going to do it again. Well, I just want to see you tomorrow, like, eating that smash of granola bar.
It's not a granola bar. Like,
whatever it is.
Look, they were reduced sugar, really crumbly. They weren't very good. But I had three of them, and now I have one of them, and it's busted.
So I was thinking, Blizzard Cube is the company who worked on Streets of Rage 4.
Okay.
They're doing that rad-looking Shinobi game.
Oh, really? Did they also do the remake of
Dragon's Trap.
Dragon's Trap?
Okay. Yep.
Those guys do good work.
Yep. Yeah, they do. I think Guard Crush Games is the other one. Yeah, they work on some, you know, Streets of Fury and then Streets of Rage.
Let's just keep going. I just want to make this as long and hard to like edit for John as possible.
I was just to say that we're, you know, it's just over an hour. We've talked about all the games anybody cares about.
We got another hour in this, boys.
Tamagotchi.
You said it wrong.
I hate how did they say it in the
group? Tamagotchi?
Gochi?
I think it should be a crime to have Tamagotchi and Tamagotchi.
I agree. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they kind of look like they're barking up the same tree.
But yeah. What about your Fantasy Life sequel?
Ooh, that looks bad.
Yeah. I mean, like, for the
Isn't
moment...
Is there like an iPhone port?
No.
Was there an iPhone port?
There was.
Okay.
This is Keiji Inafune in concept.
They fired him.
No. That's part of the story, okay. Sean. Is that... The fucking dude who put out Mighty No. 9 was working on this game and then got fired a year ago, in which there was an official comment from the head of Level 5 that was basically like, we had to redo the whole game last year. Like, it was real dog shit until like last October.
Listen, I know that, you know, technical performance is not everything in a game, but when you can count the frame rate by eye in a moving trailer, maybe don't use that shot in the trailer. Like, because they showed like three different shots. Two of them were fine.
Yeah.
One of them was 10 frames per second.
And it was like the first one.
Yeah.
It was the intro. It was like, why are we using that? Like, don't show that. Cut and away.
Like, it just sucks because like that first Fantasy Life game is so special and good and cool. And it's just like this 3DS game that I love is just being slowly lit on fire over the past 2 years.
Yeah.
And they're threatening to make another Professor Layton game too.
Oh no.
So
I mean, not threatening. Like, they announced it.
I know.
It's happening.
But they also announced like Fantasy Life to come out 2 years ago. So
that's true. They did announce a lot of stuff that I've never heard about again.
Yeah.
So.
Although I will say Megaton Musashi that they put out last year. On Switch in North America. Pretty good.
That was pretty good.
Yeah,
I like that. And with that, because nobody immediately started talking in that space.
We fucked up, you guys.
I would call that an episode.
All right, so Craven the Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just let it run.
If you have things that you liked from the direct, send them in.
We need to record this.
Quick, turn on the camera.
Oh, no reason. It's delightful. It's a little rawr.
It's so rawr. You can't tell.
Fans of one male raisin rejoice.
For the audio listeners who don't have a visual feed, Andy is eating the sad granola devastation. It was in a Ziploc bag on this table.
The big person did indeed eat the whole person. Can't confirm.
May I also want some cookie?
No, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you, though. I really appreciate it.
I have gummy bears that I shouldn't be eating.
All right, bye.
All right, that's good. Bye.
See you at 10.